You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, I've been very fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors that have shared valuable stories and helpful information who are all working to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound and make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our topic today is really all about making informed choices and the possibility of mental health recovery without medication. Now, I believe that emotional distress has many causes and can be a normal reaction to pain, stress, major life changes, trauma, or social isolation. Distress can't always simply be reduced to a biochemical imbalance. Now, our guest will share with our audience evidence-based research on psychotropic medications, including long-term studies which have shown that people can and do recover from extreme emotional distress, often without the prolonged use of medications. And our guest believes that families and individuals should always make informed choices about medication use or non-use to optimize health, personal recovery, goals, and quality of life. So joining us today, Lisbeth Rias Cooper is the spokesperson for Families Healing Together. She shared with me and on her website that she spent many years trying to help her daughter find healing in what she describes as a fragmented mental health care system that often treated her daughter as a diagnosis and a collection of symptoms rather than a person with unique strengths and potential. Becoming very proactive, Lisbeth created a community where individuals experiencing extreme emotional distress could find compassionate and effective support. Now, with her husband, Don's help, they founded Cooper Reese Healing Community, where hope is nurtured and residents are empowered in their recovery. Lisbeth, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for that beautiful introduction. I feel very honored to be here with you today.
Well, I'm very thankful to have you on the show, because what you've done, and when I mentioned about being proactive, you know, I think a lot of us, you know, get into situations where something hasn't gone right, you know, in our family, something hasn't gone right in our business, or whatever it is. There are times in which things don't go the way in which we plan. And I think what sets people apart is those that become proactive and say, you know what, I see something where there needs to be a change, and they go for it. And to me, you and your husband are a great example of that. So thank you. I appreciate what you've done to help families all over the country.
Thank you. I think I've always had more guts than brains.
But well, it probably takes quite a bit of both to make some of the decisions that you've made and go the direction that you have. So I think to start off with, why don't you share with our audience in a little more detail, you know, what led you to do this work where you're now helping families?
Thank you. I just want to clarify first, I am not a mental health professional. I'm just a mother, and a mother on a mission to make life better for the individuals and for families who who have a mental health challenge or diagnosis has impeded life in many ways. And we always think about when someone has a, and I hate to use the word diagnosis, but on lack of better, I would say when somebody is diagnosed with a mental health challenge, it does not just affect the individual, it affects the entire family. I remember when he was in my own family, I could barely speak about it for a long time. There was the shame, there was the guilt, there was the blame, and there was the stigma. And I honestly thought I was having a panic attack the first time I shared with a close friend, and this was 6 months after we understood that what was happening with my daughter. She, instead of going to college, and she had scholarships and she had grants, a brilliant young woman, she ended up in a hospital, and we spent the next 10 years in and out of what I call a very fragmented and mismanaged mental health care system. And it was always about separating her from the family. And doctors would not speak to us, the dog, because she was the patient and we were the pain, and you know where, because we kept saying, well, what's happening, what's going on, educate us. Well, you are not the patient, we can't do that. You got to figure, you find your own way. Just a couple of years ago, I read a study that was done by the School of Social Work at the University of Kansas, and they did a 3-year study that showed that if a family gets mental health education, the reduction rate or the relapse rate can be reduced by up to 75%.
Yeah.
Wow. 75%, you mean that means 3/4 of a relapse could be avoided if the family had the right tools and the right education.
Mm-hmm.
And I know myself, over the years, I had to learn. The only education I had back then was at a hospital up in New York, where a couple of young social workers took it upon themselves a couple of nights to just spend 2 hours with families and just give us some brief. I didn't have a clue what was happening. I didn't know what all the fancy words meant, and I became only 5'3", and every time I met with a doctor, I became shorter and shorter until I almost disappeared and let them handle it.
I was just saying, I think you bring up a really great point. And when you mention from the standpoint of the stigma or the embarrassment to where people don't want to go out and talk, you don't want to go out and talk about it to other parents. But what happens is then nobody is talking about it. And I know that with some of the families that we end up working with, where we're transporting their children and we're talking them ahead of time to get some background information, you know, to help us safely get them to the program. Many times what I realize is before I can even get that parent to give us honest information, I have to talk to them about the fact that this is not their fault. This is not something to be ashamed of. Because what I realize is that, you know, they're so closed off from wanting to talk about this that they don't want to give us, you know, very much information, which then makes things very odd, because now it's like, okay, but why is your child going to this program if you're telling us that there's nothing wrong? I mean, you know, you have to speak about this. And what I realized with many of the parents is once they did start to speak about it and once they felt like they were not being judged, now all of a sudden it felt like there was this giant weight lifted off their shoulders. So was that something that happened for you also, that once you realized that you were going to become proactive and you were going to learn about this, was it like taking this big weight off your shoulders that you could now openly talk about it?
Oh my goodness, and meeting other families in the same situation, because my previous friends in social circles, they had fallen off like I had the plague. I wasn't fun anymore. I didn't have a lot of money left because everything went to try to get help for my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't fun anymore, and I didn't feel like socializing. I didn't feel like doing anything because inside I was going through all of the stages of somebody grieving. There was the shock, there was the grief, there was the anger, there was the frustration, and mostly there was, like, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. And I don't know who to talk to. I don't know who I can trust anymore. And it was, and everywhere I took my daughter, she became more and more medicated. She gained an incredible amount of weight, but she wasn't getting better. And well, that was the real scary part.
Right. Now let's talk about some of those medications. I mean, you know, what were some of the ones that that in your opinion didn't work or were not, you know, we're not moving in the correct direction, and at what point did you realize that this was not the path for her?
Well, she kind of took that path because I was so brainwashed that medication was the answer, and she had to take the medications. And I always heard these horror stories: if you go off your medication, then you relapse. Which is true, you do, because most people go off their medication cold turkey, and that is not the way to do it. It's very important that if you do want to go off your medication, you taper off, because you go into withdrawal, and you can actually feel worse during that process than while you take it. So it's very important that you get help and you do it in a very truncated and a very deliberate way, because otherwise you will absolutely rebound and you may come out worse than where you started. And unfortunately, I've seen it one too many times where someone goes off their medication cold turkey and then rebounds further into the abyss than where they came from. But it can be done, and my daughter showed me all the time it can be done, because she simply wouldn't stay on her medication.
Uh-huh.
And frankly, if it made me feel as miserable as she claimed that she said it did, and gain as much weight, I don't know if I would do it either, to be honest with you.
Well, and I think you bring up a great point, and I know that we've worked with with many psychiatrists that you know, that have said, you know, that they are going to now start, you know, they would become a new psychiatrist for a particular young person, and they'll say, well, the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to slowly start weaning them off this cocktail of medication that they're now taking that has been put on by somebody else, because they want to get back. They can't start treating somebody that's on five different medications and really know who they're dealing with. So as you said, and again, I'm so glad you brought it up, it is important, you know, that they're weaned off very slowly. And they're taken off, you know, and I've seen the doctors do it before, you know, it's one at a time, you know, and then they go very slowly and they'll wean them off of that one as they reduce the dosage. And then they try to get them down to a situation to where now they're either not on any medications or they're only on a certain one that they feel is now, you know, something that is working for that particular child. So, but yes, I think you bring up a great point. There's no reason to all of a sudden go cold turkey and make matters worse.
But what is important is within mental health and in physical health and in the world is to give people something else. And that is, you meet the person where they are. And set, you know, someone said to me yesterday, and I think it said, set your hopes high and your expectations low.
Uh-huh.
And this way you're not setting yourself up for failure. You always remain hopeful and you set your hopes high, but if you set your expectations low and make certain that the expectations are not your expectations but the individual's expectations. I always had these expectations for my daughter, which was wrong. Because they were my expectations. They weren't hers.
Uh-huh.
And boy, did I have a lot to learn. If only I could, everything I've learned over the past 20 years, I could just go back now and think about all of the mistakes that could have been made. And also learning how to communicate, what to say and what not to say.
Uh-huh.
And probably the latter is more important. One of the things, because my daughter borderline personality disorder, I learned a lot of DBT skills, And again, it's common sense. You validate the person. You validate their emotions. You meet them where they are, but you don't judge their actions.
Mm-hmm.
And as human beings, we judge actions. You know, I've been the worst offender. I've done it all. I've learned. I'm not as bad as I used to be. But at those days where you're exhausted, you can't do it. I just can't take anymore. And we all have those. We all have those. And that's why I was instrumental in starting Families Healing Together, which is a recovery-based education program for families. And it's offered online, so you can take it at your own leisure. It's moderated and it's interactive, and families are loving it because they now have a virtual community. And especially for those who are not comfortable going out in public or being with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all strengths based.
Okay, well, what I would say, while we're talking about this, let me share with everybody, for those of you that are at home or that are at your office and you're listening through your computer, you can follow along with what we're talking about right now. You can go to family.practicerecovery.com. So that's FAMILY.PRACTICERECOVERY.com. If you go to that, you can see, you can open up another window, you don't lose us, and you can kind of see what it is that Lisbeth is talking about, where this is a community where people can feel safe, they can go in, there's classes that can be taken. So, in fact, Lisbeth, share with us a little bit about some of the classes that are available on that.
Well, the two classes are available. One is called Families Healing. It's under Families Healing. It's called Practice Recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is called Practicing Your Hope. And sometimes just maintaining hope is probably the most important thing that we can do for ourselves and for our family members. And I always make certain the families know that you can recover for yourself. You cannot recover for your family member. Inasmuch as we want to fix our sons or daughters or brothers and sisters, we cannot fix anyone. We can try and fix ourselves, and good luck even with that one. But we can only recover for ourselves. And I think that was one of the most important lessons I had to learn. And then I had to learn not to enable, but let my daughter figure it out on her own and learn how to allow her to make mistakes just like we all do. But I always wanted to keep her really close so she wouldn't make any mistakes, so she wouldn't fall into any traps, she wouldn't get hurt. But that is not realistic. We allow our children in general to have their own lives and go out and experience life. Well, if there's a mental health challenge, we tend not to want to do that. We want to keep that person really close on a short leash. And I had to learn that was about the worst thing I could do. And once I learned to let go, and instead of my daughter asking me for permission for everything, I would just say, "You're 34 years old. Why are you asking for my permission?"
Mm-hmm.
You can do that on your own. You can go. You can do it. And she said, "Well, I don't have any money." So I said, "So you're not asking for my permission. You're asking me for money."
See, some things don't change at any age, huh?
I know. that's one of the difficulties we have when there's a mental health challenge. And I meet with families day, you know, all the time. I met with a family today and said, "Well, we're so concerned about our daughter." And I said, "I understand, but you learn to breathe. Allow her to be her own human being. Allow her to be her own person. Only then will she get better, and then you will start feeling better too, and it will all." I said, "Yeah, but this and that could happen." I said, "I know, you could walk out the door now and you could have a heart attack too."
Yeah.
This is one of the things we do as families. We enable the person who has a mental health challenge. We want to fix them. We want to cure them. We want to learn to let go, Mom and Dad, and let them make their own choices. Some will be good, some will not be good. And hopefully in a process, both have the, you and the individual have the education and the tools it takes how to communicate and how to avoid some of those pitfalls.
Now, are those some of the things that people would learn in taking some of the courses? Because I know, you know, when I was looking at the site and I noticed that, I mean, one of the courses was Recovering Our Families. And so I also know that on this show, and I'm very thankful of this, but we have lots of professionals that listen. So I know that there are ed consultants, psychiatrists, psychologists that subscribe to us through iTunes and a variety of different ways so that they can listen, you know, after work or something. So for people who are part of the mental health industry, you know, how would this work best for them? So in other words, rather than this being directly just towards parents, what about some of the professionals? How can they use this or license this to be able to help the families that they're already working with?
I think that you bring up a really good point. Thank you, Alan. The two way is when a family comes in or an individual comes in, I think they should have a ask, require. I would like to see a require, but definitely encourage families to take the class. But I would also encourage every professional and educational consultant out there to take the class. So this way we all speak in the same language. And we all play in the same sandbox.
Yep.
Because it's all strengths based, and the first class is just is introductions, and then there's also learning how to let go, learning how to let people make choices, and I would encourage at Cooperies we offer this at no charge to all our families, and we offer it at no charge to all our staff. That's how strongly we believe in family education.
Well, I think that's phenomenal. And you brought up Cooperies, your healing community. Tell us a little bit about that. And starting with, I mean, how long has the organization been in existence?
We will be 11 years old this June, and this was. Cooper Reese for starting. Cooper is my husband's family name, and Reese is my family name. We started this after spending 10 years in what I call the fragmented mental health care system, finding a place that was hopeful and where people could truly heal for my own daughter, and I never found it. I found hospitals. I found a lot of well-meaning but often misguided mental health professionals. And it was always about the diagnosis, and I was always told that, well, just expect the fact that she will live at home for the rest of her life and she will never amount to anything and she can't do anything. This is a young woman who is a brilliant, absolutely brilliant. She's also an artist. And I said, I'm not going to accept that. What parent is going to accept that?
Oh, I know.
And it was always... Remember the last time she was hospitalized, and it was not pretty. I sat in the ER for 8 hours to get her into a hospital, and she was there for 3 weeks. She wasn't getting better, but she was getting more and more medicated. And one day, I don't know how it happened, but one day the door was left ajar, and she was gone. She had left the hospital, and I did not know where she was for a couple of weeks. And then we got back together, and I promised her then and there I would never hospitalize her again. But I also realized that I was not going to get any of the help, and neither was she that she was looking for. And so I asked my husband, I said, to help me. I said, let's form a healing community, a therapeutic community where people can truly heal. She had spent 6 months at a place up in Vermont earlier in her challenged years, called Spring Lake Ranch. And it was the first time I started seeing a glimmer of hope, and I started seeing that there was life after a mental health diagnosis. So my husband was not exactly excited about this prospect, But I also knew that I needed somebody who had the business acumen that could do it, and which he's brilliant at. And he said, but you know, listen, we don't know a damn thing about mental health. How are we going to do this? I had worked in the fashion industry in New York for many, many years. And I said, it's very easy. I have seen over the past 10 years everything that does not work and has not helped my daughter. We just do the opposite. Where they say no, we say yes. For starters, I said, we are not going to have any case managers. And he said, what do you mean? I said, people not cases. We're right. going to have recovery coordinators. We're right. not going to have step programs, step down programs, because people don't step down. We're going to have graduate programs where people move upwards.
I like
we're
that.
Gonna get out of, we're going to get out of all the negative language.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to meet people where they are. Then we're going to give them purpose. We're going to give them dignity. We're not going to have a difference between staff and residents. We're all going to be members of the community. And I said, we're going to do something real radical. We're going to have organic, healthy food. And we're going to have exercise as part of our daily program. And I said, we're going to have massage therapy, because I know so many people who have been in unhealthy relationships because of their mental health challenges. People need to learn how to have healthy touch again.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have therapy, but it's going to be recovery-oriented. And we're going to have a psychiatrist part-time, because our community is the most important there is. And I see it time and time again. Like today, I just came and I had lunch at Cooper Reef. A young woman had come in, very nervous, very anxious. And she sits down and she's trying to decide whether she wants to be there or not. Another resident comes up and sits down next to him. Hey, I'm so and so, and how are you? And you know, we're gonna be. We just had two baby lambs. They were born today. Would you like to come and see them after lunch? The young woman looks at the other person like he or she has two heads, because I'm here because I have a mental health diagnosis, and you asking me to come and see baby lamb.
But that's beautiful. I mean, that's real life.
That's real life. So people get up in the morning and they have a purpose because they are part of our life skills program. This is not made up work. This is working in a kitchen, helping prepare meals. There's going to be a mutiny going on if the meals don't show up on time. We have people in a housekeeping crew, but they like to be called campus crew because it's a little mm-hmm. sexier, I guess. And so the place has to be kept clean. We have people that work on help us in the maintenance crew because, you know, the grass grows and the weeds mm-hmm. grow. Then we grow probably about 2/3 of our own vegetables. It's all organic.
Mm-hmm.
And we take care of the animals. And our animals are all pets, so we don't eat them. And we take care of them. And I see often that if you cannot relate to an individual, to a human being, you can often relate to an animal.
Absolutely.
And once you take care of that animal, and the animal does not know whether it's Sunday or Tuesday, it needs to eat, it, you know, it needs to be cleaned up, it needs to be taken into the, out in the pasture, into the pasture.
Right.
And that's, and a beautiful relationship starts with the animals, and then they're often transferred to people.
Yeah. You know, we're going to take a break, but for everybody out there, again, we're speaking with Lisbeth Reyes Cooper. We are talking about the Reyes Cooper Healing Community, and while we're going to break for a moment, you can pull up that page as well, and you can, again, you can see what we're talking about. There are pictures of this beautiful location in which this community is set up. So that is www.cooperreese.org, and that's COOPER, and Reese is spelled RIIS.org. So stay with us, pull up that other window, open it up, and we'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago, to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today, Lisbeth Rias Cooper, and we are talking about the Cooper Rias Healing Community right now. And again, if you had the chance, if you opened up the window, you can follow along with us. Lisbeth, we have a question that has come in via email. This one reads, my nephew returned home from a therapeutic program in Utah after turning 18 last month. I have to say I was shocked when my sister told me how many medications he was taking for depression, bipolar, and sleep. She refuses to believe that the doctors could be over-medicating him and that some of his behavior issues could be related to these medications affecting his personality. Please tell us how you would approach or your program would approach a conversation and where could I send her for better guidance? And again, she means sending her sister for better guidance in how to deal with her nephew. Lisbeth, what would you say to her?
I feel for you. My heart bleeds for you. The first thing I would do is I would try and get a second opinion. Try and see if you can find an integrative therapist or an integrative psychiatrist. And get a second an opinion or a third opinion. I would keep on looking for mental health professional until I got the answers I wanted. And you're absolutely right. Some of the medications can, in fact, make the condition or make the symptoms worse than they are. And it's scary. It's very scary. I see new residents come into Kubris often with a 2-gallon bag full of medication. And I just shudder to think about what it's doing to their physical and mental system. And one of the things that we do at Cooperies is that we make certain that we see that when people have purpose in life and they have something to do and they are needed, the need for medication is drastically reduced. But going back, I am not physician, I'm not a mental health professional, I'm just a mother. But as a mother, I would start finding and looking for a doctor that gave me the answers I wanted and have somebody analyze it and look at it, because chances are that he could or he or she could be over-medicated. I don't know, because again, it's long distance, I'm not a mental health professional. But I would definitely look into it and find someone and look for an integrative therapist or psychiatrist to help you, because that person would be less likely to prescribe a lot of medications.
Well, now, you mentioned that you have some families that come in to Cooper Rias, and as they're coming into your community, coming in with a 2-gallon bag of medications, how does your psychiatrist, your part-time psychiatrist, statistically, I mean, how many of those people end up getting weaned off all or most of those drugs?
We take a very individual approach. It's each one. There's no one size fits all. we practice what we call medication optimization, and that is we try with each person to get them on the least amount of medication feasible. But it can take a long time to wean somebody off that process. We also practice, or we use, is a genetics test. It's called where we can actually, it's called GenoMind, where we can actually do a genetic test. It's a saliva test where we can get the results back, and it will show exactly what the person was responding to and not responding to, and also what could be dangerous for them and what they may have an allergic reaction to and what could actually aggravate their symptoms. And we started doing this about 6 months ago, and we hope to have a position paper out on this in the next few months. And we're trying to make this a general practice for all our residents. And I've seen some of these. That's absolutely amazing. You know, prednisone, you often go to the doctor, you may have pneumonia, bronchitis, you go and you get a high dose of prednisone. Well, if your genome marker says you're allergic to that, that could actually put you in a psychotic state.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is something that we started doing within the past 6 months, and the results are absolutely fascinating, because now if somebody needs to take medication, we can target it specifically towards the genetic makeup of the individual.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the community itself that you've set up. Mm-hmm. How many people are in the community now? And what are the what is the age range? What is the average length of stay? Share with us a little bit about that, so people can kind of get a picture of this community that you have set up in North Carolina.
Okay, we are licensed by the state of North Carolina, and our licensing is for 18 and up, and we get people as young as 18 and one day. And the oldest resident we have had is 72. The average age is in, I would say, early 30s. That's the average age. The average stage is about 6 to 9 months.
Okay.
And that and one of the things that we have learned, and we had a professor that came and lived with us for 6 months with his family and three young children. And it was his sabbatical, and he interviewed a lot of residents during that time to do his paper.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he found consistent with everybody he met was that the most important thing they had gained from being at Cooperese was being in community. The community-based living was so important to them because they felt validated, they felt welcome, they felt integrated, there was no stigma, they were just Joe or Lisa or Sam or Deborah, and they were just a person at that point. And that's when the healing began and the anxiety level went way down.
And what normally takes place, if somebody is there for 6 to 9 months, how is that sense of community translated when they go back to their own home environment?
There's several things. Let me share with one other thing. We have what we call our level one or level A. We have two facilities. One is based in the city of Asheville, where we have 24 beds. Mm-hmm. The other is based in Mill Spring, which is near Tryon, 45 minutes southeast of Asheville. We have 36 beds. So we have 60 beds for an intensive level of a level one. Then when the person feels that he or she is getting to a point where they want to start transitioning, they have the option of going into what we call level B, which is one of our community homes. They're staffed 24/7, and they're 3 to 5 bedroom homes, fully staffed, fully furnished, where the person can move in and start a transitional lifestyle. By then, they take medication. They have to show, and they have to be able to self-medicate, because the houses are not licensed. And also they need to demonstrate that they have the ability to go to work, school, or volunteer for 20 hours a week, because we don't want people to sit around and on the sofa all day and smoke cigarettes. That's not what we are about. We are about helping people get their lives back.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone takes turn in the house cleaning. Everyone takes turn in the grocery shoving. Everybody takes turn in the food preparation, and meals are taken together. Because coming from the therapeutic community like Cooperese, where the meals and everything just shows up, and mm-hmm. then going right into having to do it all yourself, and now you do it in a much smaller group and a much smaller community.
Right.
And then we have about 12 or 14 houses, and then we find that the people in these in the houses now, they come together once a week and form their own little community, and they talk about their work, their school, and they support each other because they all know each other. Then we have a series of homes that's not staffed, but not overnight staff. But again, it's part of the transitional process where you now live, and now you have to kind of take care of the house of your own. You have to do it with a lot less support.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's sort of a test. And then last, you can move into the community in your own home, but still get your support and your services to Cooperese. Each of these levels, you can stay for 3 years, because we don't want to get into the chronic mental health care.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see, you can stay to 3-6, you can actually stay in a program for 9 years, and then the last level, you get the D level, you could stay indefinitely.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, I like that, because what you've done is you've talked about how they're continually graduating to another level of mm-hmm. of independence, you know.
Yeah.
So And to me, that makes perfect sense. As you know, you're not taking them, and that's been one of the biggest issues of many years ago. Now it's gotten much, much better, but there was a time many years ago when I first got in this industry that aftercare was not really approached, at this type of level. So often they would go back into a family, and if the family is as dysfunctional as they were at the beginning of this, nothing happens, or if they have not been helped in understanding what the procedures are or what the boundaries need to be, then the teenager would go back to the same, doing the same things that they were doing prior. So I love the fact that you have this graduating system in which they're becoming continually independent in their own living, which is should be the goal for all of us.
Yeah, and all along the families are educated and informed in the process.
Uh-huh.
And we have within the Cooperese wall, we have another level of family education, and that is it's the resident, it's the family, and it's the therapist. They have family therapy, and we find that to be really interesting. We started with just family education weekends twice a year.
Uh-huh.
Now we still do family education weekends, but for 2 days. But then in the 2 days, which is therapy with the individuals. It's the trio. It's the therapist, it's the resident, and it's the family. And that can be interesting. But the families have had online education class already, and they get regular calls, weekly or every other week calls from the recovery coordinators. And in the process, we hope that the families have also learned the language, because it's so important that you understand the same language.
Yes.
I remember when my oldest daughter went off to college. She leaves in August. She comes home for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the person I sent off to college is the one that I remembered. The one that came home is somebody I had to learn. I just had to meet all over again.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty soon, I started treating her the way she was when she went off to college a couple of months earlier. it did not grow very well because she had grown and I had not.
Oh, that's a great point.
Comes to cooperies, they grow, they learn, and they evolve. Mom and dad, brother, sister, families have not, and they go right back to old habits, and it's a recipe for disaster. So that's why we spend so much time and energy and money on family education. We don't charge the families extra for that. That's all part of the program because we know that it's important.
That's beautiful.
And that's why we did Families Healing Together online, because that's something every family and mental health professional in the United States can take advantage of. And we made it very affordable. We made it $150 for 8 weeks.
Yeah.
It's probably too cheap.
Well, we have another email coming across, and this one reads, I was so delighted to see your program philosophy featured on Alan's show. I am a psychologist who has turned into a huge proponent of getting teens off medications and using nutrition and other therapies to treat mental issues. Thank you for your great work. I look forward to learning more about your programs and your courses that are helping families that that I can be working with. So that's very nice.
Oh, this is music to my ears. Thank you, thank you, thank you, whoever sent that in. It is absolutely music to my ears. Because this is, mental health challenges are not going to go away. They seem to get bigger and bigger every day. And they also get more and more, glorified, sensationalized in the news every day. Because you only hear all of the bad stuff. You don't hear about all of the people that recover. And people with mental illness or mental health challenges are no more dangerous than the next person you meet on the street. On the contrary. And then when we have the Murphy Bill, I don't know how many are familiar with that, the HR 3717, which is basically forced treatment. Because people are scared. You have the Fort Hood incident, people are scared. But that is one out of a million. And we cannot have forced treatment. Forcing anything on anyone has never worked.
Well,
but if you can partner with the individual.
Yeah. Well, and again, the community you're working with, an over 18 community. You're working with adults. So from a leverage standpoint, they need to buy into what it is that you're doing. And you're right. Mm-hmm. Trying to force it is probably not going to be the best way. You know what? Unfortunately, we have just about ran out of time. I wish we had more time. I'm enjoying this. We've got about a minute. If you can give us, I love to end on a success story. So if you can give us, be it your own or a recent one, at Cooper Reese, share with us a quick success story as we go off the air for today.
There's so many success stories, and you know, you have the dentist that come in suicidal, try to kill himself, and is now one of the most successful dentists in North Carolina. You have the teacher that's back working. Mm-hmm. You have the student that's back in school. I could go on and on about the beautiful stories. There's also some that's not as beautiful. But one of the things that I'd like to end with, my husband and I started Cooper Reese not because of our daughter. I mean, not for our daughter, but because of our daughter. We did it for your sons and your daughters. And we know the type of recovery that we practice there every day. It's heartfelt, it's heart-based, and we know it works, and we know people get better. And we have followed people, and we know that if they go through the whole education process that we offer, they have a 75% chance of going on to lead a fulfilling life, whatever that is.
Well,
and that, to me, is recovery at its best, and that is something that I go to sleep every night, and I thank God that there are places like Cooper Reese. I only wish there could be more, and I wish we could be the model for mental health.
I couldn't have said it better. Thank you so much for joining us, Lisbeth. And again, for anybody, if you want to get other information, if you didn't get the websites before, go to our website, Answers, the numeral 4, thefamilyblog.com. All of the information of Lisbeth and of Cooper Reese is on there as well. Everybody have a great week and be with us again next week. Thank you.
My name is Darnell Young, and I'm desperately reaching out for help. In 1970, after a blood transfusion, my mom contracted hepatitis C, which later evolved into terminal liver cancer. A transplant is her only chance of survival, and we don't have the means to fund the surgery. My stepdad's working as much as he can, and I just got off chemotherapy myself, so I've been limited in what I can do. Any amount you could give would help our family more than you can possibly know. You can go to our fundraising website at youcaring.com. That's youcaring.com and search One Family's Battle, onefamily battle, and you can donate directly there. Don't forget to capitalize the first letter of all those words. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.